there. Welcome to Radio Utopista. My name is Elisabeth Weidt. Thank you for tuning in again. It is now almost 6 weeks since the horrors in Israel and Palestine started. Again, but this time in an unprecedented manner. It has never been so cruel so far. The horrors are ongoing until today and this very moment that I'm recording now here. Almost 6 weeks of constant killing, death and despair. More than 1,000 Israelis were killed during the Hamas attack, and more than 11,000 Palestinians were killed so far during the constant bombing of Gaza by the Israeli military. Sadly, this number will continue to rise because there is no end of the bombing in sight. At the same time, in the occupied West Bank, the violence against Palestinians is also escalating, settlers and soldiers working hand in hand. So much has been said about all of this, the root causes, the power imbalance, and the world not being able to stop this horror. There seem to be no words for it anymore. So much has been said, and it is still happening. Words don't seem relevant or powerful in the face of all of this. They don't seem to find their way into the hearts and souls of people, especially into the hearts and souls of people in power. And in such times of war, how can journalists cover topics in a constructive way, or people set hopeful examples, even though there doesn't seem to be anything hopeful at all? It's challenging. Our key mission here is to spread constructive stories. So we took some time to reflect and ask ourselves what we can add to the increasingly loud and aggressive discussion about Israel and Palestine. Talking about rights of nature as planned and promised didn't really make sense to us in such crucial times when human rights are at stake and so many human lives are at stake and in danger day in and day out. This is why we are in delay with this episode. Sorry for that. Hope you understand. We will talk about nature and justice and this court case in Ecuador as promised, but later. Today we rather talk about human rights and resistance and about the power of watermelons. So indirectly, it is also about nature and justice. Because especially in those dark and violent times, utopias are needed more than ever. Alternatives to violence and killing are needed more than ever. Alternatives to black and white thinking, to prejudices, and to the division of the world into a simple good versus evil pattern. They are almost essential to survival now. But to find those alternatives is not easy in dark and chaotic times, of course. How to imagine alternatives and to work on them when you are shocked by the events and when the majority of the public discourse even considers the horrors as collateral damage in the fight against terrorism. Personally and emotionally, I am very connected to Israel and Palestine. Just spent a few months there again this summer. I have friends there and friends at other places with roots from there. They come from different cultures, different religions, and different social backgrounds. And they have different passports, because there is so much more to what is happening now than just Israel versus Palestine. My first visit to the region was in 2007, and it was kind of a shock. It was so different from what I was told in school or in most of the media. I heard so many stories of injustice happening to Palestinians that I just didn't believe them, like in the saying, what shall not be, that cannot be. My mind just didn't want to see what it saw and was told, which was basically the bloody result of occupation and impunity, land grabbing, killing, house demolishing, and prison sentences without trial in the occupied West Bank. I kept coming back and trying to understand more, spent months in Ramallah and the surroundings. I made more and more connections and found more and more truth. Israel and Palestine, they have so many layers and intense emotions to it that it's not easy to talk about it, especially as Germans, being the nation that killed millions of Jews and still doesn't really understand why and how this was possible. It definitely played a huge role in the creation of the State of Israel and therefore the expulsion of 800,000 Palestinians. And these days, we make big arms deals worth billions of euros or dollars with Israel. So we are connected here big times. And so it seems even more important to talk about what is happening there, with empathy and balance, of course. There is enough hate and incitement out there. I don't want to give you a lesson on what is happening in Israel and Palestine now or how history led up to this point. There is a lot of good information out there and a lot of people who know a lot more than I do. We will put some links and reading recommendations in the show notes. What I want to tell you is how we try to create an utopian moment in the midst of all the darkness, violence and despair happening. A tiny moment of freedom and justice from Germany to Gaza. Because the horrors happening in Gaza, they are interconnected with the world. To the US, to Europe, Germany, and to the Arab nations. The United Nations have a say in it. Iran, Turkey, even China. And in all those places, there are people living. And all those people, they can have an impact on the decisions of their governments, especially in democratic countries. And people are rising, more and more are taking to the streets and speaking up in the name of justice. So today I tell you how we organized a protest against the bombing of Gaza and the killing of thousands of civilians, while protesting for Palestine in Germany was very often forbidden or allowed but then stopped and fined. I also want to share some thoughts about activism and being a journalist and would love to know what you think about this. Then we have a very interesting Harvard study on the success of nonviolent protest I came across during my research on nature rights. Grateful you're here. Hope you find some insights and inspiration along the way. If you like it, please share our work with anybody who could need a little utopia these days. So after the Hamas attack and the immediate carpet bombing of Gaza, me and some friends who also have a strong connection to the region were in shock and disgust for days. All the bloodshed and the dehumanizing language, it made us paralyzed. We saw more bloodshed, more hatred and division coming, but we couldn't act to do anything about it. Then one night we had the idea to organize a protest with watermelons. The watermelon is an old symbol for the Palestinian flag because it has the same colors. Red, the flesh, black, the seeds, green, the peel, and white between the peel and the flesh. It is used whenever the flag is forbidden or falsely seen as supporting terrorism. It first appeared as a political symbol after the Six-Day War in 1967. Here Israel took control over the West Bank and Gaza and annexed East Jerusalem. From then on, it was a criminal offense to show the Palestinian flag in public. With the Oslo Accords in 1994, this ban of the flag was lifted again. After all, the idea of Oslo was to have two states, Israel and Palestine. And that also requires two flags. And the German government, like many governments, until this day today, they are supporting this so-called two-state solution, at the end of which there is, of course, a free Palestine, and therefore a Palestinian flag. Nevertheless, in many places in Germany, and especially in my city of Hamburg, protests for Palestine were very often forbidden when the bombing of Gaza started. Until this day today, there's a general order of the Hamburg police. In the beginning it said, quote, "In connection with the developments in the Middle East, the Assembly Authority has banned assemblies that are related to Hamas," and then in parentheses, "so-called pro-Palestinian assemblies," end quote. So the authority here equals being pro-Palestinian with supporting Hamas. And it was not just the authorities who drew this analogy between Palestine and terrorism over and over again. It was also the sound of many media outlets and many politicians talking. We wanted to set a counterweight against this notion, at least a tiny one. We wanted to say something totally basic out loud. Palestinians are humans and they deserve equal rights and freedom. Stop killing them to fight terror. Bombs cannot fight terrorism anyway. Books can, and equal rights and freedom can. But we were not allowed to protest for such things openly. So we painted signs with watermelons and let them speak. We, that is me and my friend Lena, who is a lawyer, and some people and friends supporting us. The first protest happened October 18th, so some 10 days into the bombing of Gaza. Police gave us the so-called flag square to stand up with our watermelons and didn't know how ironically fitting this was. The second protest happened 1 week later in front of the municipality of Hamburg. We got closer and closer to power and draw more and more people. We hoped they would understand our message without being too explicit and protesting for freedom rights in general. This was also the cause for which we had officially registered our assembly with authorities. My friend Lena.
Danke, dass ihr alle gekommen seid. Wir stehen alle hier, weil wir eine Nische suchen, unsere verfassungsrechtlich verbürgten Freiheitsrechte wahrzunehmen. Ich habe viele Reden verfasst und wieder verworfen und habe kurzzeitig auch gedacht, weißt du was, wenn du nicht richtig demonstrieren kannst, dann lass es halt ganz. Das hier ist nichts Halbes und nichts Ganzes. Wir stehen hier mit Melonen. In einem Land, dessen Grundfreiheiten es sind, seine Meinung frei zu äußern und sich zu versammeln, um auf seine Wut, seinen Zorn aufmerksam zu machen.
And people did understand. They loved it. One of our videos has now more than 500,000 views. We got thousands of messages from people all over the place thanking us to speak up for something that should be totally normal, like freedom rights for everyone, human rights for everyone, international law for everyone, no matter what nation, no matter what culture, no matter what religion. If you want to see some photos and videos, check out our Instagram or my personal one. Nevertheless, there is now not more freedom in the world because of our protest. No lives were saved, no bombs not dropped. But our protest was not forbidden or disrupted like many others in those weeks and still until today. We were able to say, not in my name, and set an example in a country that has massively restricted protests for Palestine. And the messages we received show that we could spread some hope, inspiration, and even peace in very dark and chaotic times. So at least it helped us and others not to despair and to cope with this horror and violence emotionally. And maybe we could even open some hearts of some people in power. I want to read you some examples of the thousands of messages we got. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. I had to cry. I cannot and do not want to understand what is happening here. It is like a nightmare from which you never wake up. You said what many people think and feel. And another message. Thank you for your initiative. We do not know each other, but to be able to feel the same emotions is connecting humankind. To see that somebody from outside is supporting me as a Muslim is giving me a lot of hope and strength to get through all this suffering. I feel like a total stranger in Germany now, even though I grew up here. Thank you for your courage. And of course, we needed courage to do that. We were afraid to organize this protest. The whole Western world obviously has difficulties in criticizing Israel. But in Germany, it is especially difficult. We murdered 6 million Jews. We promised never again. But because of this almost incomprehensible horror of the Holocaust and the still existing racism in this country, we sometimes get confused what never again really means. And also what anti-Semitism really means. The easiest answer and solution here seems to be always stand in solidarity with Israel, no matter what. So of course we were afraid to raise our voice for Palestine, to hold speeches, to upload them on social media. My friend Lena is a lawyer, I am a journalist. Speaking up for human rights for Palestinians is not often appreciated here, and sometimes dangerous for your career. But now there are so many Israeli Jews and Jews living outside of Israel who are speaking up against the bombing of Gaza and against the occupation in general, that it should be now more and more clear where the difference between anti-Semitism and the right to criticize the Israeli government is. Many people said many smart words about this. My favorite quote here comes from Deborah Feldman. She's a Jewish author, American and German, living in Berlin. You might know her story Unorthodox, about her growing up in an ultra-Orthodox Jewish community in New York. The book was sold millions of times. Netflix made a series out of it. In a German TV show, she said last week, quote, "I firmly believe there is only one legitimate lesson from the Holocaust, and that is the absolute, unconditional defense of human rights for all." End quote. That also means that the horrors unfolding since so many days now is not so much about Israelis versus Palestinians or Jews against Muslims. If you want to make a division or separation, you can make it along the lines of human rights and international law. Who is acting according to it and who is not? And that applies to everyone involved. This is why we officially registered our watermelon protest in the name of freedom rights. That was and still is allowed in Germany, so we could sneak around the ban on pro-Palestinian protests. You can speak about freedom rights for all humans everywhere in Germany. If you want to talk about freedom rights, especially for Palestinians, it becomes complicated. The kufiya, the symbolic Palestinian scarf, for example, is mostly allowed at protests, but was forbidden to wear in the schools of Berlin, for example. And then protests themselves often get forbidden. The reason given is that experience had shown that there was a, quote, imminent danger of incitement to hatred and anti-Semitism, glorification of violence and acts of violence. End quote. And true, there were protests against the bombing of Gaza that turned violent, even with burning cars and some real anti-Semitic claims. But then authorities do not have to prohibit the entire protest itself, but could just take out the people who are violating the law. Demonstrations organized by right-wing extremists, for example, do not get prohibited in general in Germany. In fact, the number of demonstrations organized by Germany's neo-Nazi scene was significantly higher in the first half of this year than in the same period of the year before. They tripled, according to the Interior Ministry, from 35 demonstrations to 110. The right to freedom of speech is one of the most important and strongest rights a democracy has. Without it, all other rights lose strength. It must be possible to protest against the policies of your government and against the policies of other governments, especially when your government has strong relations to it. This is the absolute basis of a democracy, to remind the authorities of their responsibility, to demand answers, to disagree publicly with people in power if you disagree with them, to speak truth to power. This is also the task of the media, which is why every strong democracy is protecting and exercising freedom of the press. But if we do not implement these democratic basics, we can basically forget about everything else. What is the point of having oat milk coffee for breakfast and anti-racism trainings in the office if my government is supporting suspected war crimes and the killing of thousands of civilians and I cannot even protest against it without fear? There is so much fear out there now. Fear of exclusion, of losing jobs, and of protests turning violent because of what the police does or because of what extremists do. And there's a lot of anger out there because people do not feel seen in their need to protest and in their need to grieve. But when you are not allowed to speak, those emotions don't just go away. They turn into the extremes. And this is also why freedom of speech is so important. To have an open society that is listening to each other, that is listening to different viewpoints on reality. Always on the basis of the Constitution and the law, of course. And they also give you the freedom rights. The basic freedom rights, the civil liberties, they have grown out of one of the biggest crimes against humanity. They were established after the Second World War and the Holocaust. They were established to prevent that something similar can happen again. So safeguarding and respecting these rights is a fundamental task and responsibility for all of us, especially in Germany. And this makes it all the more alarming how these rights are being massively restricted here. Still now, in the sixth week of the bombing of Gaza, this policy is strengthening the picture of Palestinians and or Muslims as a general danger, as related to terrorism and anti-Semitism. Deportations shall be made easier. This is what we are talking about now in Germany these days, in the media and politicians. But that way, anti-Semitism will not leave Germany because it is an inherent part of the original German society. According to the BKA, the Federal Criminal Police, the vast majority of anti-Semitic crimes are committed by people in the right-wing political spectrum. So, I see two harsh truths here. To support Israel at all costs does not release us from our German guilt, and to ignore what is happening in Palestine will even add to our guilt. To talk about all this and to even organize a protest for this was not easy for me and my friend Lena. But it seemed the only right thing possible to do in the face of the horrors unfolding. We are lawyer and journalist, but before everything, we are humans and citizens. And as humans and citizens, we saw lives in Gaza in danger and our democracy in Germany in danger. We needed to act, even if it was just for our own consciousness. What shall we tell ourselves in 1 year when asked, "What did you do to prevent it?" So we basically brought our profession to the street, speaking on behalf of basic rights and raising awareness about what is happening. We did not stop the bombing, of course not. We did not even save one life. But we spoke our truth to power and to the people with the help of watermelons. It was an experiment. People found inspiration to do something similar. Some politicians saw the videos of our speeches. Is this activism? Is it journalism? Where is the difference anyway? Shouldn't we all be active for basic human rights, freedom rights, whatever job or challenge we are having? And journalism that is pretending to be objective doesn't work anymore anyway. Not for a long time already. Maybe it never has. Because there is no both sides. There is no black and white. There is no good versus evil in our interconnected world. Everything has context. Everything has history. Better you know who is telling you the story and their truth. So, transparency is king for me, or queen if you want. And then you can decide if you want to listen to the storyteller or not. Nobody can give you the whole picture anyway. You are responsible for most of the stories you allow to enter your head, heart, and soul. So, thank you for allowing this story to enter your soul. We have more constructive ones on our Instagram or in the podcast episodes before this one. I want to add some data to give you something more concrete to the inspiration. And it is really super stunning. There was a study done by Harvard political scientist Erica Chenoweth, together with Maria Steven, on the effectiveness of the methods of nonviolent protests. It is interesting to note that Chenoweth herself believed that nonviolent resistance does not work in really tough conflicts, such as against authoritarian rulers. but the result of her analysis of more than 300 conflicts and uprisings between 1900 and 2006, this says, peaceful resistance is twice as effective as violent protest. Almost 60% of violent revolts failed, while only 20% of non-violent revolts fail. Important for their success are also a clear goal, good organization, good leadership, and a number. To get governments to act, at least 3.5% of the population would have to participate in the movement, peacefully, of course. That is not a small number. In Germany, that would be 2.8 million people. I sent the photos of our watermelon protest to a young man in Gaza. He's connected to one of our first Radio Utopistan episodes about a young woman that is putting solar energy on the rooftops of Gaza. It is from June 2020 and you can still find it in any podcast app in our feed. Solar panels are one of the important sources for electricity in Gaza, especially now after Israel cut off the electricity. Maybe you already listened to this episode. If not, it will give you an impression of business, siege and occupation in the often called open-air prison of Gaza. The young man doesn't want to give his name. It became too dangerous. When he saw the photos of the watermelons in Gaza, he wrote, quote, "Your support makes me cry. Please stay safe." So, a guy being bombed in Gaza writes to protesters against the bombing in Hamburg, "Please stay safe." This world obviously is in a very strange situation. He and me, we are normally writing text. It is for small protocols of him and other people trying to survive in Gaza, for the online version of Die Zeit. I asked him to send a sound message to hear his voice.
Hi, Elizabeth. Yeah, I'll make sure to record some voice notes, but it's been difficult because the fights are continuous and nonstop. And we have to be on the ground all the time, because otherwise you could get hit by a fragment. So I'm sorry about that. It's just going to take some time to be done. But anyway, Elizabeth, as I mentioned in my text message, the situation is way, way worse than the first few days. The water is non-existent, food as well. Electricity does not come. The only way we can charge our phones is to go to the nearest neighbor who has solar power so we can get some electricity to charge our phones. We don't have water, clean water to drink, only salt water from water wells that our neighbors also can bring from underground. The food also is so, so terrible. We've been eating canned food for the past 20 days. But we try to survive and also to avoid being on the windows, because otherwise we could get hit by something. We also feel so sick because of the food, and also because of being nervous and anxious all the time and hearing loud noise from the fights. Hopefully there will be a ceasefire soon, and or we can leave Gaza to a safer place. Not to Sinai, because we hear rumors that we will be expelled to Sinai, but we don't want this to happen. And hopefully we can stay at our homes and a ceasefire comes and everybody be safe.
That is what he sent on the 31st of October. His messages got a lot shorter since then. I don't really know what to reply anymore anyway. No words can give comfort. And again, about being a journalist here. Of course I am. And I'm also writing to him as a human being who has empathy. So I send him my thoughts and love and prayers and hope he will make it through the horror. In the first week of the bombing, he wrote, quote, "Once this is over, I would love to speak to you about our work and how we are going to help hundreds of Palestinian families who suffered from this war." Yeah, once this is over, then I will ask him about this work and share it with you. Thank you for listening to our work here at Radio Utopista. Team for this episode are me and my fellow Utopista radio colleague and friend, Christina Fimuos, and my lawyer friend, Lena. I leave you only with your thoughts this time. Bye-bye. And until the next one. Salam.